ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Planning Committee. One or two notices. You'll have to excuse my voice. I've had a cold and it's gone straight to my throat, so I'm a bit hoarse tonight. Like others, it's also affected one of the speakers. This meeting will be recorded and a sound recording subsequently made available via the Council's website. Please also note that under the Openness of Local Government Bodies Regulations 2014, people may film, record, tweet or vlog from this meeting. The use of any images or sound recordings is not under the Council's control. Anyone needs the toilets while we're here, they're through the door at the back on the left-hand side, on your left-hand side. Could you please put all mobile phones either to silent or off? There's nothing worse than having one go off in the middle of someone's talking. We're not expecting any fire alarms this evening, but if there is one goes off, then we head out through the doors marked 1, 2. Right, we go on to the meeting. Apologies.
Chair, I've had apologies from Councillor Bentley, Councillor Gaskell and Councillor Lowe.
Anyone else? Thank you. Minutes of the previous meeting have been circulated and read. Everyone satisfied they should sign them as a true record? Thank you. There are no questions under Committee Procedure 12.8. Disclosures of pecuniary and personal interests. Anyone got anything to complain? No. Thank you. Planning applications. We go to item one, which is Silverton Road, Loughborough.
Thank you, Chairman. Before I start my presentation, just to advise members, and you'll have seen from your extras report that since the publication of the agenda, there have been a number of additional representations relating to the application, but as you see from the extras report, it's not considered they raise any new matters, and the matters which are raised have been addressed in the report which is before you. This application relates to a semi-detached house on Silverton Road in Loughborough, and the proposal is to change it from a private dwelling house to a C4 house in multiple occupation. This is the location of the property on the eastern side of Silverton Road. And here we have it again. And again, many members will have been on site this afternoon, but for the benefit of those who weren't there, a few photographs of the property. As I say, it's the right-hand half of a pair of semi-detached houses. It's a house which has previously been extended, and I'll show you the floor plan in a moment, but it has a driveway which can accommodate probably at least two cars and a single garage. And here's another photograph of the property. If we go on to the floor plans, on the ground floor, I say the house at present is in use as a private dwelling house. This proposed change of use won't change or reconfigure any of the rooms whatsoever. So what we have on the ground floor is a living room, kitchen, dining room and a conservatory. They would remain as they are now. On the first floor, there are four existing bedrooms. And again, they would be used as four bedrooms as part of the house in multiple occupation. And the final room is a loft room up in the roof space. As you've seen from the report, there are a few key points I need to go through briefly in terms of the proposal, and these in main relate to the Council's planning policy and the supplementary planning guidance on HMOs, which is set out in detail in the report. If I go through the various elements in terms of that guidance. The first one is the impact on the balance of the local community. As you'll see from pages A6 and A7, We've carried out our usual assessment in accordance with our policy and guidance, and there are no other HMOs within the 100 metres distance. Therefore, the percentage of 0% is clearly well below the threshold set out in the policy. Antisocial behaviour, again on pages A7 and A8, we've carried out our investigation into that and gathered evidence from the colleagues in the normal fashion. And again, there are no recorded incidents in Silverton Road and other nearby roads relating to antisocial behaviour. In terms of noise disturbance, as you'll have seen from the layout and is set out in the report, what you've got is living rooms downstairs in the existing dwelling. There would continue to be living rooms next to similar rooms in the adjacent attached dwelling, and on the first floor and in the roof space there will be bedrooms. So in terms of noise disturbance, as is set out in the report, it's considered to be an acceptable relationship insofar as there are living rooms next to living rooms and bedrooms next to bedrooms. Amenity space. There is a substantial private rear garden to the property. And again, those members who haven't been on site this afternoon will have noted that in front of the property there's a space which has been made available for the bins and recycling bins. So in terms of amenity space and the normal facilities we'd expect to see with an HMO, this property has those already provided. Highway safety, page A9, and goes on to look at highway safety. As you'll have seen from the layout and from the photographs, there is a driveway for at least two cars and parking for a third car. The proposal, and it's set out in one of the conditions, is that to take account of this is a sustainable location near to bus routes and reasonably close to amenities. Therefore, it's felt that the existing parking on site would be acceptable, but there's a condition that part of the garage should be given over to secure cycle parking to give those future occupiers of the dwelling safe place to keep cycles and offer them the alternative of another mode of transport. And as I say, there is parking on site and there are bus routes nearby. So in conclusion, it's felt that when assessed against the relevant planning policies and the council's guidance as set out in detail in this report, it's felt that this HMO would be acceptable, and it's recommended that permission is granted subject to the conditions set out in pages A10 and A11.
Thank you. We have three speakers tonight. I'm very sorry about the voice. Sharon E. Carey, who I gather has got problems as well, and has someone to stand in for her. Piers Ross Roberts, who is the applicant, and Councillor Ron Jukes, Ward Councillor. Could Miss Carey or the alternate come forward to the table, please? You come forward. In the middle, yes, please. And the way the system works, everyone gets 5 minutes. At the end of 5 minutes, I say you have to stop, and that's it. The light system here, green is okay, you can talk. When you get to 4 minutes, it changes to orange. When you get to the end, it turns red, and you must stop speaking then. Okay, it's all yours. Press the button to the right of the speaker.
Oh, good evening, everybody. As you can see, I'm not Sharon. I'm Martin Ashby. 10 Silverton Road is situated at the centre of a group of 15 houses. Residents form a friendly and supportive community. The majority are long-term residents and are either retired or approaching retirement. When the deeds for our properties were drawn up in the 1950s, the authors were mindful of the impact of their use upon other residents. They included a clause indicating that no parts of the land or buildings on it should be used in a way that might be an annoyance to the inhabitants of the houses adjoining or nearby. A total of 12 out of the 14 households have objected to this application, clearly expressing their annoyance at the proposed use of the property. In granting approval of this application, the council would therefore be facilitating non-compliance with the obligation laid down in the deeds. Residents were dismayed at reading the planning officer's report. The report makes many unsubstantiated assumptions, and it's evident that little effort has been made in it to entertain residents' concerns. On crime and antisocial behaviour, we're told that there have been no reports of such behaviour over the past year and concludes that the HMO is therefore unlikely to lead to an increase in such behaviour. This is a non sequitur. The one does not logically lead to the other. On noise levels, the report states that a five-bed HMO is unlikely to be more intensively occupied than if a large family occupied it. Where is the evidence for this? In any case, it is the time of day of the noise disturbance that acts as a stressor, and it's a shame that the planners have failed to recognise this. Families benefit from a level of parental awareness and control over noise levels. Independent tenants will lead independent lives and will attract their own visitors, thus increasing the potential for greater noise as well as parking issues. Discussion of noise transference issues has been disregarded, and the officer has instead judged that it is neither necessary to carry out a sound transmission assessment nor to condition the provision of soundproofing. The applicant will merely be advised on measures and may, of course, choose to disregard them. The residents of number 8 have direct experience of noise disturbance from a next-door HMO. Indeed, it encouraged them to move to the relative tranquility of Silverton Road. On highway safety, we're told that the road is relatively lightly trafficked. Again, no evidence is provided for this judgment. Next week sees the start of the new school term. We'll once again see the road being used as a rat run by vehicles avoiding congestion on Epinal Way, and doing so at an inappropriate speed for a route used regularly by school children and elderly residents. With the potential for an increase in the number of cars parked on the road, there will be an even greater safety risk. An assumption is made that few tenants will have cars. The road is on the outskirts of the town, and public transport links to other parts of the town and to neighbouring cities can be time-consuming and expensive. The first tenants will be students, but what about future tenants? The proposed solution, a condition of providing planning permission, of providing precisely 4 bike stands in the garage is astonishing. Please, the impact of parking should not be underestimated. So we've all noted policy CS4 and the supplementary planning document, and understand that a planning decision is one of balancing the benefit with the potential harm. In this case, policy CS4 applies very clearly, and I quote, "There will be instances where the impacts of a new HMO in an area with a low proportion of HMO properties may be judged to be so significant under the provisions of policy CS4 that planning permission should not be granted." The harm created by the impact of an HMO more than outweighs the potential benefit here. Additionally, the SPD states that Core Strategy Policy CS4 states that we will prevent houses in multiple occupation that in themselves or cumulatively damage the social and physical character and amenity of a street or residential area.
4 minutes.
The key policy considered here firmly provides for this proposal in this area to be declined, given the impact and considerable effect on the amenity of the existing residents. Residents respectfully request that the committee refuses the application to prevent an inappropriate and wholly unnecessary change to the nature of an established residential area. Thank you.
Thank you. Piers Ross Roberts, please.
So my name is Piers Ross Roberts, and I'm the new owner and resident of 10 Silverton Road. I've applied for planning permission to change this house from a C3 to a C4 HMO. The application is for a 5-bedroom house to be converted into a 5-bedroom C4 HMO. This means there's not an increase in the number of people living in the property compared to a large family. This is unlike most HMOs, where communal living spaces are often turned into bedrooms. The property was chosen as aligned with the supplementary planning document provided by Charnwood Council. First of all, it's not in a concentrated area of HMOs. The property also has local amenities nearby, with a bus stop 0.1 miles away and Tesco 0.6 miles away, both within walking distance. This proximity to amenities and the university, which does not allow driving, should mean that a use of a car is not needed, and therefore I do not believe the conversion to an HMO would cause substantial traffic increase on local roads. In fact, the property with students would have less cars and fewer than a family with teenage children. There is space for waste and recycling bins in the garage and the forecourt. Therefore, the change would not generate any extra waste being stored on the street. There is on-site parking for two cars plus a garage that is intended to be used for bicycles. The road also has plenty of space with unrestricted parking. On the note of noise and antisocial behaviour, the property was picked specifically from away from nightclubs and pubs in town and aimed at quieter students or professionals. Again, there wouldn't be any extra people living here compared to a large family, so I don't believe the noise increase would be there at all, really. I think one HMO in an unconcentrated area is less likely to have any noise issues, and I can see the neighbours' concerns, but this is taking a stereotype of students in town and applying it to an unconcentrated HMO. It also clearly states in my draft contract that the tenant shall not do anything to or on the property that causes a nuisance, annoyance, or damage to adjacent property or the owners or occupiers of them. I've also noticed comments about maintenance, and I'd like to reassure them that this is my only residence and I'll be maintaining it to a high standard, and have already made various improvements since moving in. I've also looking to maintain this future properly in the future. I'm working towards my Dash landlord accreditation and look to do everything in the future to make this property well maintained. Overall, I would agree with the case officer and the pre-planning that the proposal would not result in an over-concentration of HMOs in the area or community imbalance. I'll be living in the property and can confirm to make sure that the concerns of the neighbours are not realised. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Hughes.
Good afternoon, Chair, Committee. As most of you know, I'm Ron Dukes and I'm the elected member for the Outwoods, as is Jonathan Morgan. And probably most of you have read his comments on the front of the Echo, which I fully concur with. And the problems we have with it are traffic, parking, and the impact on the character of the area. The planning officer said that they were working to 20% saturation. I chaired the committee on HMOs some 5.5 years ago and recommended 10%. That's 5.5 years ago, and it still hasn't been initiated as such. In fact, most of the 15 recommendations haven't been initiated at all. When we talk about HMOs and their impact on local people, we should also bear in mind that the people, and this is the current trend, the people who live next door to an HMO face a financial loss because their property is not looked upon as a good thing to sell because of the HMO problem. Dash, the gentleman said he's going for Dash to recommend his house, but Dash, like the university, have absolutely no powers of enforcement. Policy CS4 and TR18 in particular says that a house with five occupants must have parking for three cars. If you put two on the drive, one in the car and the cycle rack, I can see major problems when trying to get out. There is a careful balancing act to be taken. Where there's a low proportion of HMO properties, you really have to look at the impact it will have on the fabric of that area. And during term time, I don't know whether anybody went to the house, but during term time, the traffic is greatly increased, and it is a wrap run for the M1 and the A46 to Leicester. There is a surfeit of vacancies in three privately owned purpose-built halls of residence within 3 minutes' walk of this building. And from the quick survey I've done, there are something in the region of 200 to 300 vacancies. And I don't really see the need for HMOs, quite frankly. In fact, Professor Smith, the accepted expert on studentification, is now doing a report on the result of having purpose-built multi-halls of residence will result in HMOs being vacant. And he sees it in the future as a major problem, where you probably have major problems with crime and antisocial behaviour because they're empty. The university currently are building a 500-room special students' accommodation halls of residence and have plans for more in the future. And if you look at this in context rather than... rather than a single item, you'll see that nothing happens in isolation, and what probably will happen in the future will have dire results. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Can you... Thanks. I have one speaker up to now. Anyone else? David. That's three. Anyone else? Okay. Councillor Bryan.
Thank you very much, Chairman. I did attend, I went on the site visit this afternoon. I also was there with the officers to listen to their report, and I also had driven round myself to acquaint myself of the area. I would like to point out I did not read the front page of the Echo. I do buy the Echo, but as soon as I saw it was mentioning an item that was coming to this Plans Committee, I put the paper away and I have not read it yet. I have gone basing my feelings and my decision purely on what I have seen, what I have heard, and the report of the officers. HMOs have caused quite a lot of problems one way and another in this town. I think some of it, with the greatest respect, it's not blown out of all proportion, I don't think it is, but I do think there are people that are very good residents as well. I am encouraged to hear that the owner of the property, it is his property and he will be living there. I think we have to, even if it's students, we have to presume they may not all be 18 and 19-year-olds just let out of home and going on the rampage. You now have a loft of mature students that may not want to live in halls of residence. We're encouraging people who are leaving other careers to go and take degrees, particularly people who've been in services such as police and military and things like that, to do degrees to change career. Now, I think to presume that they're going to expect problems, I think that does a disservice. Therefore, I will be supporting officer's recommendation. Thank you.
Is that being put forward as a proposition? Anyone seconded? Councillor Seaton. Councillor Snod.
Chairman, thank you. I just want clarification on a couple of things, if I may, and probably through you to the officers. I see that it does meet all the specifications and policies that we have, which to say that we can refuse is very difficult. But I do take up the point about the highway, and possibly if the officers could just tell me, I've not seen any statutory consultee from the Highway Authority. Is there one, or is it something that we've not done? I go back to page 9 at the bottom, where it says the Highway Authority standards and safe policies are not generally accord, and not generally accord with the Highway Authority standards and safe policies. Have we any indication what the Highway Authority are saying?
Thank you, Councillor. Through the Chairman, in terms of highways, as with, I think, probably the majority of relatively straightforward applications, and this application falls into that category, the Highway Authority point us to their standing advice for planning committee and planning officers to interpret that themselves or to use that for their planning judgment. So the Highways Authority have not formally given us comments on this application, but that's not at all unusual. They point us to their standing advice, and that's what's set out in the bottom of page A9. So the highway safety assessment has been carried out by planning officers having regard to the standing advice which is being provided by the Highway Authority.
Just so I'm absolutely clear, we have actually had that information from the Highway Authority.
No, what the Highway Authority have said is that it's for us to use their standing advice. So we have not had formal comments from the Highway Authority on this application. But as I said, that is very common now with many applications. And what they do is they direct us to their standing advice, which sets out the criteria or rules by which we should assess applications.
Could I just ask one more, Chairman, if I may? It goes on to A10, which is on the conclusions. It talks again about the safe policy TR18. However, this does not outweigh the benefits of the scheme. Could the officers just tell us what the benefits are?
The benefits of the proposal are that it's providing a particular type of residential accommodation. So it's providing a house in multiple occupation to meet a particular need. So one of the benefits of the scheme is the provision of a house in multiple occupation.
So could I just be clear? So we're balancing this against a multiple occupation against a family house?
Thank you, Chair, if I may through you. The benefit of the scheme, and I think set out within the report, is the general desire to create a mixed community and provide opportunities for people to contribute towards that mixed community. In terms of, if I can just go back to the point around policy TR18, the specific reference in the conclusions to the slight conflict with TR18 is the starting point on TR18, which is about parking levels, and that's referenced in the first part of that policy. But that is the starting point within that policy, and as set out from guide members towards it on page A2 of the report, we clearly set out there, you know, the reference to the number of spaces proposed being below what that guidance would normally seek. But that is a starting point, and the quantity of parking allowed should reflect the proposed use and the location of the development. And things like access to non-car modes and the scope for practical measures to significantly reduce trips. So in this case, there would be local facilities fairly close at hand, as well as bus services. We talked about shopping facilities earlier. as well as the provision within this scheme of parking space for cycles as well within the overall envelope of the scheme. So although it's contrary to part of TR18, that starting point, the other elements of it do allow you to see some support through that policy. And as I say, the benefits of the scheme are providing that mixed community and an opportunity for people to contribute in that wider area. Thank you, Chair.
And finally, if I may, Chairman, it may be a question for the legal officer. Should there be always, if it's a statutory consultee, reference to that within the paper?
Well, the planning officer's report paper just has to be a summary of the key points. I don't, as far as I know, there's not a requirement to refer a statutory consultee. I don't know if there was one missing that is the point behind your question. But yeah, there's no requirement. It has to. The paper is just a summary of the assessment of the application, so it should contain everything you need to come to a judgment on the application yourself. Matter of... Yeah. It would be helpful, I think, to know if you think there's something missing. I just
want to be very clear that we, as a statutory consultee, there should be a consultation, especially if they say that it doesn't conform to their policy. Now, what I would like to see is something, response from statutory consultees, one from the Highway Authority. So I'm a little sort of apprehensive about how I deal with that.
My understanding is the officers have consulted the Highway Authority, and there is guidance on what it's the officer's choice, to some degree, who's consulted, but there is guidance that the officers will have followed as to when the Highway Authority needs to be consulted. They have been. What they have done is said that they're not putting a formal assessment in themselves, and they have referred us to standing advice, so it's not that they haven't been consulted on the application. But that's for officers, but I presume... Oh, Pat confirmed earlier, so I haven't dealt with consultation.
Just to be clear on that point, as the legal officer has stated, the Highway Authority were consulted on the application, as they are on all applications, and in this instance they've pointed us to their standing advice. So it's not a case of a statutory consultee being missed out of the loop. It's a case of, with certain categories of application, they point us to, or direct us, as I said, to their standing advice for us to take into account.
I think we've just about covered that one, David. Okay, Councillor Tillotson.
Thank you, Chair. I know this part of Loughborough very well, having lived round the corner, really, for almost 10 years. We cannot assume that a single HMO will cause annoyance or community imbalance. Other families in other parts of Loughborough have many more HMOs in much closer concentration than this single HMO will cause. In fact, I'm actually quite pleased to see an application for an HMO outside an area which already has too many. I do support, as was mentioned by Councillor Dukes, the proposal that areas should have no more than 10% HMO, even though some parts of Loughborough have already got 80%. That is clearly not going to happen in this part of Loughborough. So I can see no planning reasons for refusal, and I will be supporting the officer recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Seaton.
Thank you, Chair. I too am pleased that the landlord will be residing in the premises. It is a huge investment to make, but we must understand and realise that that gentleman will grow up and leave that accommodation. So he will become an absent landlord, and I'm hoping that he will be a responsible absent landlord. I too want to say about assumptions, and assumptions work both ways. One of the speakers said the report made a lot of assumptions from the officers and was not backed up with facts. But assumptions work both ways. There was also a lot of assumptions that they're going to be students there. And they may well not be. And not all students create all the nuisance around the town, as we well know. During term time, increased traffic and rat runs. Well, that happens anyway, so this HMO is not going to increase that by a substantial amount. It already happens. My only concern, if I could have a look at the property again, please, photograph of the property. I'm very much into the street scene, and I did not come on the bus today, and I did not actually visit the property. So I'm going to have to be guided here. Are there some residents that have completely opened their front and made it accessible to three or four traffic vehicles?
Sorry, councillor, today was my first visit there, so I have to say I don't know. That may be the case, but again, I'll be making an assumption. So, honestly, I don't know.
Sorry, can I help just a little bit? From recollection, I know there was a development site opposite where they were reinstating the wall on some properties opposite. I think that was the case. But generally, the neighbours either side, as you can see, well, you can't quite see it from there. I think there was a caravan in the property next door. You can just about see the top of that. But even there, I think there's still a frontage detail. And I think the same next door adjoined to the application property. So I think there are some fairly decent walling details. And the officer's report also sets out that, as members saw today, you could actually accommodate an additional parking space on the front. But officers thought that for the amenity of the area, it was better to leave the existing parking provision as it was, provide some additional cycle parking as well, give that option, so as to maintain that character within the street scene. Thank you.
Thank you. Because I noticed it could be up to increased to three parking spaces, but that would mean the removal of the green landscaping to the front, which I think adds to the street scene, and I think it would be quite important to keep it. I wondered whether it was possible, because it's not something we'd do on a private residential house, whether it was possible to have that as a condition, that to have that removed and make it a full-fronted parking space, they would have to come back and get planning permission for the removal of the wall and the, well, not necessarily the tree, but the removal of the wall. I don't know whether that was possible at all, because I'd like to preserve the street scene.
I think, as I just set out, Councillor, the officer's view on that is that to maintain the integrity of the street scene, it's probably a reasonable balance as put forward at the moment. What you don't appreciate from that photograph, but from on site, behind the frontage vegetation is also a very low plinth with some waste storage facilities as well, which are very discreet, and you have to go behind the boundary treatment on the front to actually see that. And I think taking the greenery away would perhaps expose the frontage and have a negative impact on the street scene, which is clearly a concern. Oh, sorry, to actually keep the wall. Oh, sorry. Sorry, I was... yes. yeah, it's probably... in this instance, I don't know the classification of the highway there, whether they would need to come back to require permission for...
If I could just interject here. I'm sure we have done that recently. Yeah. Said it's a condition. So we're not saying never, but if they do want to knock down the wall and make it a full accessible driveway, they have to come back and get a planning permission for that. As it stands at the moment, they can just... they can. I'm talking about as if it was a group of people. But, you know, the owner could just come and knock down the wall, remove the tree without, you know, a planning permission or anything. I'd like it to be retained as a condition that for that removal, it has to come back to plans. Would that be possible, please?
I think it's something we can consider and put in place. My only slight reservation was alterations to an access onto a classified road, whether that be an A-class road, B-class road, C-class road, would naturally need permission. So it's whether it's reasonable in this case to impose a condition. But, yeah, we can certainly consider that if that's part of the recommendation this evening.
Can we put that recommendation in? Would the proposer and seconder be happy with that?
With a slight clarification, and why I was asking if I could just have 10 seconds. For people that weren't on site today, it's quite difficult to see from the photograph that there is already a minimum of 2 parking places there without any removal. I think if the officers and the rest of the committee wished to put in a condition that the wall has to come back to here if they want to remove it. I don't know whether we're then setting a precedent. What about other people in the street if they want to remove a wall? Can someone then turn around and say, why haven't you done it? Why aren't they coming back for planning permission? I mean, you could have a house with 3 adults in it and the teenage children, and they can have 5 cars. It's happened in my road. So I think that if it's up, pardon? No, but
stop it! You're talking across.
And I think also we would have to be very careful what we said about trees and greenery, because they may die. They may not. I think from safety. In principle, I suppose I would support the recommendation that if they want to pull down the wall, but if in the future that's no longer a house of multiple occupancy, would that condition then be removed? I don't know.
It sounds to me as though it's something that's very difficult.
Chair, if I could come back. The legal... Sorry, keep calling you that, don't we? Lady, she did nod, and I can remember it probably 3 meetings ago, that we did put that as a recommendation, that if the wall was to... I'm not talking about the greenery, but if the wall was to be removed, it would have to come back to planning just for that removal. That would be a recommendation.
I can remember a meeting quite a while back now, wasn't it, where we did have the condition, but what I'm trying to rack my brains for was... I think it was in a conservation area, wasn't it?
No,
was it? No. Yeah, it's...
I'm sorry, I think we just sort of take it as it is. We take the recommendation. We've got a recommendation from you that we grant conditionally. It's been seconded.
No, I remove my seconding then, please.
Is anyone else prepared to second? Okay, thank you. So can we take a vote on this, please? Those in favour? No. Too late. Those in favour? Yes. Those against? Abstentions. 1, 2. Thank you. It's granted. Thank you very much. Councillor, I'm extremely sorry you did put your hand up. Excuse me, we were not voting on the wall, we were voting on the original proposition. It was said. Thank you. Going on to the next item. Unit 1, Daggy House. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman. Again, for members' benefit, before I go through the report itself...
I just say that Councillor Tillotson is going to be speaking on it. So, that's all right. We'll be speaking shortly, so she's leaving.
Thank you, Chairman. I'm sorry for interjecting. Before I go through the report, members will have seen from their exercise report that there's been one additional comment in respect to this application, but it did not raise any new issues, and the points which had been raised in the late representations were already addressed satisfactorily in the committee report. This application relates to an existing industrial unit on the Geldershall Road industrial estate, and as the title explains, the proposal is the installation of four internal spray booths into an existing part of the factory premises and the installation of associated exhaust and intake stacks connected with those spray booths. This is the application site on Geldershall Road. The site is bounded to the east and south by existing commercial premises, and to the north are residential properties, and these are on Beaver Way and Arundel Drive. So Beaver Way is the road that backs onto it, and Arundel Drive is a little cul-de-sac that comes down to the line of the old railway. And the site is separated from residential properties to the north by the Jubilee Way, a former railway line that's now disused and somewhat overgrown, but just provides some screening between the application site and neighbouring properties. These are some photographs of the application site. As members will have seen, it's quite difficult to get in and look at where the vents are going, but this is the gable end of the building, which will contain the spray booths. This is a view of the roof where the vents will be coming through, and as you'll see, there are some existing vents on the roof, but not as tall as those which are proposed by this application. This is a layout of part of the building, and what we've got at the far end here is a part of the factory where there would be four spray booths installed and various other associated paraphernalia. A close-up of where the spray booths are going to be located. Detailed view of the spray booths and their silencers and venting equipment. And this is a section through the building showing that each spray booth has two chimney stacks. The shorter stack is an air intake stack, and the taller stack is for the exhaust fumes, the ventilation coming out of the spray booths, and there's a small chimney there associated with other operations in that part of the factory. These are side elevation, front elevation, showing what they'll look like in the context of the overall building. Another elevation showing them in the context of the building, and that's looking from the far end. And this is the end of the building, which those members are on site today would have stood next to. So we've got the end of the building here with the proposed exhaust stacks and intake stacks. And to the left here is the hedge with the neighbouring properties. I'll just look at the plan just to explain the relationship with neighbours, because clearly the two issues of concern that are addressed in some detail in the report and are supported by information provided by the applicants are impact of noise upon the neighbours and impact upon odour from the spray booth. So, as is set out in the report, it's this relationship with the neighbours to the north which is critical. One other point that's set out in the report is visual amenity. As is shown in the photographs and was seen on site today, whilst the chimneys will add taller stacks to an existing commercial building, they must be seen in the context of what is a very large industrial complex, and an industrial complex which bounds a very substantial, mature barrier of trees and hedges which screens it from neighbouring properties. So whilst there will be some impact on visual amenity, that's of less concern than the emissions of potential fumes and noise from the operation. So if we look at where we are on site, the structures are going in just here. I'm just finding the report which just talk about the relationship between those stacks and the neighbouring properties. So there's a section that talks about residential amenity, which is on page B6, and it sets out that the distance from the stacks and the spray booths would be 20 or 30 metres away from the gardens of the nearest houses, and 35 or 45 metres away from those properties themselves. And again, those members on site today can make their own assessment in terms of that relationship from both the side where the properties are and the side where the factory is. This new spray booth would replace existing booths, which are approximately here in the building. And what they've tried to achieve through this application is something which is quieter and emits less odours. The odour and noise emissions have been considered by your environmental health officers. Their assessment is set out in the report, and as well as various conditions relating to both the operation of the site, which it's proposed would operate 5 days a week for a working day. Saturday mornings, it's also proposed they would work on Sunday mornings and bank holiday mornings. On the basis that the works are carried out in accordance with the submitted plans, and that also that sound attenuation measures are implemented in accordance with the noise assessment, and again that's controlled by conditions, it's felt that the scheme would be acceptable and that planning permission should be granted.
Thank you. We've got two speakers. We've got the applicant, Robert Bonham, and we've got Councillor Joan Tassel, the ward councillor. Robert Bonham, please.
Hi. So, a bit on the background. Meggitt is a global company and predominantly manufactures components for the aerospace and defence industries. The business has changed direction since the original spray booths were installed. In the early days, Cobham, who previously occupied the Gildershall Road site, were heavily involved with GRP laminating, in particular many components for the railway industry, the larger of which was train fronts. As a result, they required large spray booths, obviously with the large airflow. Recent changes in product mix now demand the requirement to paint a variety of far smaller components, hence the requirement for the smaller booths. Meggitt Polymers and Composites are integrating their UK composites businesses and have declared the Gildershall Road site a centre of excellence for the production of composite components. As a result, this has created growth within the business at this site, whilst also providing local employment opportunities. Although external building work hasn't been required, we do need to consider the internal layout to better suit the needs of the business, improving product flow and quality compliance, securing the future of the site. Meggitt employs over 700 people in the town and is one of Charnwood's largest employers. The proposed new spray booths are of a modern design, providing a quieter, more energy-efficient plant, better tailored to our requirements. So in respect of noise, Meggitt takes our relationship with our neighbours very seriously. I do, in fact, myself, live in close proximity to these neighbours and the factory. We have investigated and acted upon every noise complaint made since the end of 2015 when Meggitt took the business over. And in the last 12 to 18 months, we've worked closely with the environmental health team and the neighbours involved in resolving these issues. The company has spent recently in excess of £40,000 on adding additional sound reduction measures to our existing dust and fume extraction systems, which has delivered a significant improvement. The feedback we've received following this from the neighbours has been positive, generally. Sound attenuation works will continue as and when required. In regards to the old spray booths, we've measured the sound levels 1 metre from the outlet on these as being 94 decibels. The new spray booths have been designed with an outlet, maximum outlet sound at 1 metre of 45 decibels. Obviously, this is a significant reduction to the original equipment and is well within the limits set within the sound report. In regards to the smell concerns, I've worked there 15 years and I don't recall ever hearing a complaint of smell prior to the application. And I was a little shocked when reading some of the neighbours' comments, to be honest. I think some of these references to smell maybe have come from when there was a fibreglassing company and obviously you got the smell of fibreglass, which is a process we no longer do. We have had our odour assessment carried out and it is predicted that any odours emitted will be negligible. So the booths have been designed around the control of noise and odour following the advice of the relevant sound and odour consultants. The commissioning process will ensure this design criteria is met. So to summarise, the new spray booths will be smaller, quieter, should have lower emissions, and they'll meet our commitment to energy reduction. Obviously, this will also suit the business better. These plans are being put together, audited, to ensure there will be no adverse impact on the neighbours. Meggitt is fully committed to ensuring there is no disruption to the neighbouring properties, and in the unlikely event of any complaints, these will be listened to, investigated and acted upon in every instance, as before.
Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Tassel.
May I just say before I start reading, this speech has been verified by Councillor Radford just before she went on holiday. She was quite happy with it. Whilst I encourage businesses that give employment, Councillor Radford called this application in after she was approached by several residents who live close to the business that this proposal is for. This was several months ago. In the past, these residents have suffered from noise and odour pollution when the previous company were using the spray equipment with the fans going for several hours. She realises that this equipment is brand new and of an up-to-date design, and the odour reports say that there will be minimum smell. We can only take their word for that. Due to the close proximity of the residential property, can we request that several conditions be applied to this application? That the noise and smell is monitored correctly and regularly, and a report made available to the residents. That working hours are restricted to the daytime hours between 8 a.m. and 6 p.m. and no working on Sunday or bank holidays. Meggitt itself, the big factory on the other side of the road, actually, I think, works three or four shifts. It does work in the evening and overnight. Because of the long wait for this odour report to become available, no chance was given to councillors to look in detail at it and to discuss with the officers any conditions we would like them to consider applying, or even for this application to be withdrawn from the plans committee altogether and then it to go to delegated powers. Thank you.
Thank you. I have two speakers up to now. David? Right. Councillor Grimley.
Thank you, Chair. Having visited the site today, we've been on site visit today, I don't think the photographs really sort of do justice to the amount of dense separation density of the trees and the mature trees that do separate the factory from the residential areas. It is a highly dense and very high trees within that area, so you can't see a lot from the other side of what was the former railway track that's there. So I think that's first thing I'd mention. Also mention it is an industrial site there anyway. Walking around there, there doesn't appear to be any odours of any real significance. I used to work next to a GRP factory, and believe you me, there are odours that used to come from that. So I think obviously the business has changed from what it used to be. Again, I think also that this gives us an opportunity to control some of the noises from the from the new plant. There is an assessment that has been carried out, and that has to be in place. I think on the whole, I'd certainly recommend officers' recommendation on this.
Do you have a second? I don't see whose hand came up first. I think it was Councillor Fryers. Thank you. Councillor Bevington.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I've actually looked at this and read through all the complaints that people had put forward. I actually think most of those that I'm aware of applied to different circumstances to even a different company. I think this is modern equipment, a modern environment. As the environmental health have provided a forecast of the odour levels that are extremely low, 45 dBA at a metre from the flues here. When you consider the protection you have of Jubilee Walk and the distance to the nearest properties is actually a very low figure, and I actually can't see any problem at all. There are already restrictions for the hours in here, which I think are probably been proposed by the company, I would suspect, more than anything else. The only excess is it's between 0600 hours and 1700 hours instead of 800 hours to, 1900 hours. And on Saturdays, Sundays and bank holidays, it's between 600 and 1200 hours. I would actually suggest that with the levels of problem that are being forecast here, that's actually not going to be a problem, and therefore I'm happy to support the officer's recommendation and recommend that we accept it.
Thank you. Councillor Fryer.
Thank you. I too visited this site today, and I think the amount of work that the company are putting into ensuring that environmentally, both for noise and any possible smell, I think they're exceptionally high standards they've got there. I think it is a forward-thinking company. I think they're improving what was there before, and therefore in mitigation, if reducing the sound levels by almost 50%, and the no order, but also we also went round to where the residents are. We all drove there and got out and had a look. You literally cannot see through the undergrowth and the thickets, the even building, and also, of course, you've got the railway line. On a very personal note, I think it's a very forward-thinking, it's a very highly skilled company, and I think we should be encouraging it, but that would not detract me that if I had any concerns at all, I would obviously voice them. But I am wholeheartedly supporting officer's recommendation.
Thank you, Councillor Snart.
Chairman, thank you. I too think this is going to be an improvement. If we take, for instance, the reduction in noise is a tremendous achievement, and it's always good to see that people are moving forward and improving the environment, and I think that's what we should be looking for. I did hear one of the speakers wanting to change the times of activity. Could I just get officer's view on that in terms of 8 till 6, and was there a reason for having it over bank holidays as well? Just to be clear, I think it's important if somebody's brought it up that we actually just try and mitigate that.
The hours which are set out in condition number 5 are those, first of all, which were requested by the applicant for their own business and operational reasons. So they were the hours put forward by the applicants. And it's on that basis that both the noise assessment and the odour assessment were considered by our environmental health officers, bearing in mind the proposed hours, and they considered that those operations would be acceptable at those times. So it's a case of the hours were put forward by the applicants. In terms of the likely impacts upon neighbours, they were carefully considered by environmental health officers, and it was felt that they would be acceptable.
Thank you for that. And I think anything that improves the environment in terms of noise levels and such, we should support and support business to do that. So I'll be going with officer's recommendation.
Thank you. Councillor Campbell.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, just a point about the, you mentioned the thick undergrowth and trees, but that is in private ownership by Squire de Lisle. What if he decided to cut them down? Is there any chance of protecting them? Or could they perhaps put some more hedgerow at the front?
There's no room.
Sort of thing. There's no room?
Yeah.
No, but I was just saying that knowing who owns them, it's a chance that they could be chopped down, you see. And then where would the residents be then if there was no screening, you know?
Pardon?
It's owned. Probably it may be, but it's owned by Squire de Lisle.
Excuse me, don't talk between yourselves.
Yeah, it is. I can definitely vouch it is owned by the Squire. So if it does get chopped down, what would happen to the residents then? You know, that's all I want to know.
I'm just refreshing my memory of what it's like on site. I mean, first of all, yes, you're right. The site does benefit from screening, which is outside the ownership and control of the applicant. So it does benefit from that. And in that case, I guess there's a possibility, no matter how slim, that over time that could be removed or fail or die. Looking at the application site, there really is little or no space to put any reasonable landscaping in. And also, I think probably unrealistic. What we're talking about here is a very, very substantial commercial operation which at present benefits from screening outside the site. By adding 8 chimney stacks to the roof of a very large building, in my view, that doesn't change it so significantly that it would be reasonable to apply a condition to put some extra landscaping in on the off chance that the existing landscaping might go. Excuse my colloquialism. So, I mean, in planning terms, you've got to think about whether it would be reasonable to apply a condition. I think what we're looking at here is a very large building. It has an impact already if the planting were to go. The impact is not significantly different if you had a very large building with the extract flues which are proposed by this application. So on that basis, I think it would be unreasonable to ask for a condition to secure landscape. I think we can only hope that if that planting were to go, that something else could be put up in its place. But I don't think it would be reasonable on the back of this application to require a condition to that effect.
For that, but I've mentioned it, and if it does happen, you know, on our heads.
Councillor Babington, you wanted to say something.
Thank you. Yes, the area we're talking about is actually a public footpath. It may be owned by De Lisle, but it's still a public footpath. My understanding is that those are protected, and if he wants to do anything else, then he has to go through a series of hoops. I would suspect that he needed to do gain planning permission as part of that to get rid of... I think there are separate rules dealing with footpaths, aren't there? But I'd be amazed if anything was to happen to that. It's only a fairly narrow railway, and that's all it is. There's nothing else you can do with it.
Thank you. Last speaker, Councillor Forrest.
Just very quickly coming back, I mean, we are talking about four new spray booths replacing old spray booths within an existing industrial building. If on the very unlikely off chance the landscaping did come off, maybe Squire Dyer would decide, or we may just take the pay to get all the landscaping chopped down. I don't know. People can do that. It's still an industrial use there. They're still using other extracts and other fumes, noises, etc., for not just this building but adjoining buildings. What we're doing here is just an improvement, effectively, on what's there at the moment. So I think I'd just like to sort of say that, come back on that one.
Final speaker, Councillor Forrest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I went on the site visit today, and I have to say it was one of the most informative site visits I've ever been on. And I think the company should invite all the councillors from Charleborough Council to have a look around one of these days, because it is such a high-tech, cutting-edge, British... they are very impressive, I have to say that. And I think that we should do all we can to forward their plans and to... because, as has been pointed out, they are a very big employer. They must be Shepshed's biggest employer, and they are a major employer in the borough. However, like Councillor Fryer, if I had any doubts about this, I would say so. The issue about the screening has been raised. The trees, the undergrowth between the nearest residential homes and the industrial site, those trees are enormous. You will not see the new chimneys above those trees. The trees are too big. The undergrowth is extremely thick. I know it is in theory part of a footpath system, but you could not excuse me, you could not possibly walk through there. The undergrowth is so thick. So I think it is very well, the homes are very well screened. Also, as I understand it, and I am in no way scientific or technical, the equipment that cause noise and odour is being removed, and the new equipment will be immensely quieter and much less... do I mean odoriferous? I don't know. It will be much less of a nuisance. So I have my second problem slightly, as others have said, are the hours of opening. Now, I actually don't have a problem with 6 o'clock in the morning. Lots of places work from 6 in the morning. I come from Nottingham. Nottingham traditionally has gone to work early. It doesn't... So Monday to Friday doesn't worry me. I can live with working on a Saturday morning. I have doubts about Sunday working and working on bank holidays, because I think people around about are very much entitled to the quiet enjoyment of their homes. And I am certainly going to vote for officers' recommendation but I would like the hours sorting out. Thank you.
Proposer and seconder, would you have any objections to changing the hours on Sundays? And
I think at this... Oh, sorry, I'm not...
I think, I mean, we are talking about some spray booths within the existing industrial building, the existing operation of the industrial building. Presumably, there are no restrictions on the use of the whole building, so we're just talking here about restricting the hours on part of the building. So the whole factory operation could be in progress, but then we say you can't use the spray booths at this time, despite the fact you're working elsewhere on the area. And taking Councillor Bevington, who does know the area more than I do, his comments and being happy with the proposed hours, I don't think I'd like to change the add that condition on in, to be quite honest with you.
I totally agree with you, because it's always a problem when you're working, you need some extra time to get a job out, and you take it when you can. Okay, we've got a proposition to grant in accordance with the officers' recommendations. Those in favour? It's unanimous. Thank you. Complete, that's passed. And you can get up and go after the last thing had gone. Item 6, you've got a list of applications determined under delegated powers. Is everyone happy with those, or anything you want to raise? No? Thank you. Committee meeting dates. You've been asked to consider moving the date of the meeting scheduled for Thursday, 25th of October, to Thursday, the 1st of November, 2018. Are we happy with that? Any against? No. Agreed. Okay. Thank you very much. Committee meeting is finished.